Now back to the best Giants talk in the Bay. The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7, The Game.
Oh, not breaking news sounder worthy, but just came across my timeline. Tyler Beedy elects free agency.
Oh.
Former Giants first round pick. The Beedy's back in town. No, but could you imagine if the Giants did that? Spring back all their lost first round picks. Austin Slater's still out there somewhere. Bring in Tyler Beedy, too.
He was such a big prospect. Remember when he was coming through the ranks?
When he was the lefty masher.
They ran him out of town.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Same thing with Tyler Beedy. You know who we're not going to run out of town, though? It's one of our tier one callers. Let's go to Vallejo and talk to our guy, Skills. What's going on, Skills?
Hey, good morning there. Sam Love and Nan Devone. Happy to be on with you. And I want to just say first, I do get Hank's point about the Rowan signing over and over again. I know what he was trying to say. But I will say in defense of Rowan, I am grateful to him for saving Jonathan Sanchez's no-hitter, as well as throwing out Carlos Ruiz in the playoffs the next year. So there's that.
There you go. Yeah, hey, Rowan had those two moments.
Yeah, he gave us that. So it still wasn't worth the entire dollar amount. But moving on, I'll just say that through the years, watching like the Warriors when they were struggling, it seemed like every week there was some ex-Warrior coming back and beating them. Dropping 30 points on them. And that's what it's kind of seeming like with the Giants this year. I mean, they're getting beat by a lot of people. But, I mean, in recent weeks, we've seen Kyle Harrison come back, shut him down through eight innings. I think it was a shutout ball. I could be wrong about that. So that was hard to watch. And then you have last night, Knopf Smith comes in, former Giant, who I hope they would find a way to bring back, even though I knew it probably wasn't going to happen. I hoped and advocated for him to come back because he had been good for us in 2025. He comes back. He delivers against us last night. Dubon, former Giant, comes back and they team up and they sink us last night, which was fitting. And, it was encouraging to see Adrian Hauser throw a couple good innings out of the bullpen. Maybe that'll help with that area going forward. But I think we're playing Arizona next. And I looked up and down their roster. I did not see any former Giants that are going to come back and hopefully beat us.
Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't happen. But I did see Nolan Arenado on that roster.
They do have Ketel Marte, though. He's just as big of a problem.
Yeah, they do have Marte. They do have Arenado, who's taken it to us repeatedly over the years. I'm not looking forward to pitching against him, even though he's getting older and his numbers are down, but still. And now I just want to target the Barrichello situation real quick. And here's a guy, and by the way, rest in peace to his brother's girlfriend who died in the earthquake.
Yeah, very heartbreaking to hear that story.
Very heartbreaking, yeah. That's just a tragedy you never want to see happen. But Barrichello, here he is. He had been on the bench since June 10th, I think it was, before the Wednesday game? And then he goes deep, he hits the game with the home, and he pimped it for all it was worth. Like he was Victor Martinez or something, that guy. And then he hits another one the next day, I think it was, and he pimps that one even harder.
He pimps things pretty well, actually, Skills.
What's that?
He pimps those home runs pretty well, I got to say, for a rookie.
Oh, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. He is one of the all-time rookie pimpers I've ever seen. And here's the thing. I had went on Facebook and I posted that when he pimped the first home run, you never know. He may never hit another one for all we know. And of course he hits another one like 24 hours later. So egg on my face for that one. But now they got to find playing time for him along with Ramos coming back. It's going to be interesting to watch all that shake out. The last thing I want to say, if I may, is about the Devers situation. And Devone, you mentioned that this has never happened before. I called it a game. I called it Willard and Dibbs on, I think it was Tuesday. And just pointed out that this has happened before. It happened with Jose Guillen of the Angels in 2004. He did the exact same thing that Devers did. Just putting that out there. And he got suspended for the rest of the season. And I have some comments about Devers on that Willard and Dibbs show. This was 6 days ago. And I stand by those comments. I'm not going to repeat them all here. I've already been on for a minute. But basically, I appreciate Devers coming through in the clutch with the home run tonight and the other day. And that, for fans like me who had pretty much turned on him after that whole situation with Vitello, that's going to help. He's got more work to do, and it's not just in the batter's box. It's not just with the mitt. You know, he's as a teammate, and he's representing the Giants. He's got to do better in those categories. He's got to continue to do those things, speak to the media maybe every so often. And, he's supposed to be – he's a high-paid guy. He's got to be a leader in some aspects. Now, he did offer an apology. I credit him for that. No one wants to hold this against him for the rest of time, but he's got to work his way back to total forgiveness for that.
I agree with you,
Skills. That's all I'm going to do today. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Skills. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Any chance they can move him?
It's not going to be easy. I mean, it's possible. I like, as Mark Wheeler would say, it's allowed to happen. If someone bites on it, though, our guy Ruderman, he's insisting that the Yankees Ruderman would absolutely want to jump on Rafi Devers. I do agree with him. I think the Yankees, I mean, it's the Yankees. It's not like they're short on cash, so they could do it. It's just a matter of what the numbers look like here. 888-957-9570.
How much money are you willing to eat?
Exactly. The question I want to ask about Rafi Devers, about Tony Vitello, about Buster Posey.
Oh, wait, before we move on for...
We'll stay on this Rafi conversation, but yeah, what do you got?
No, just a Barracuda, just a quick little nugget. Yeah. So do you know that both of his home runs went the same exit velocity and traveled the exact same
really
distance?
445-108?
Yes. Isn't that pretty wild?
Wow. Yeah, that location. One he hit on Friday, at first when I saw it, I thought it just barely got over the fence. Or not Friday, Wednesday.
Bombs.
Right? Yeah. The first one I thought it just got over the fence. I went back and rewatched, like, oh no, he really put his cheeks into that one. And yeah, basically the same home run on Thursday where he cranked it out of there, and he looks it, watches it go, turns, throws the bat off to the side. Just so much swagger there. He's got a good head of hair too, Victor Barracuda.
Like the salad?
Yeah, I like to think I'm an expert on those kind of subjects. Rafi Devers, Tony Vitello, Buster Posey. Are the Giants better with or without them?
Well,
that's the question I want to ask today. We can start with the Rafi Devers aspect of it, Dan, since skills kind of gave us that jumping off point there. And again, I know this happened a week ago, but it's still going to be something that's on the minds of Giants fans for a long, long time here. When Rafi stepped to the plate in the ninth inning on, what was it, Thursday against the A's, he got a strikeout in the last at-bat and just popped up there. There were some Giants fans who were in the stands who were booing him a little bit.
Right on.
After that moment. And
hell yes.
On Tuesday, they came back from his first at-bat on the broadcast, and they come out of commercial. It's the drone shot over the ballpark out in left field over the third base line. And then all of a sudden you cut to Rafi Devers about to get his first pitch. There was no Rafi stepping into the plate. There was no let's pause and hear the reaction when Rafi steps in. That was very much Rafi's going to get booed when he steps to the plate. Let's not show it on TV. Fans are absolutely pissed off, and they should be. That is not how you act if you're a Giant. You can act that way if you're on the Marlins or the Twins or the Pirates or some other like, this is an original eight franchise in the National League. Like, this is the franchise of Madison Bumgarner, of Buster Posey, of Willie Mays, of Will Clark. You do not show up your manager like that. Barry Bonds never even showed up his managers like that. Jim Leland that one time, but there was a back and forth there. There was a dialogue between the two.
Leland was such a badass.
Google Barry Bonds, Jim Leland, for those who don't know. To do that was absolutely childish on Rafi Devers' part. And I do think, Dan, he is going to have to re-earn some trust with this fan base after pulling a stunt like that. Giants fans are not stupid. We are a very smart fan base. We're a pissed off fan base right now. We get a little overpassionate sometimes, like Hank did in the last segment, but we are an intelligent fan base. We know when a guy truly belongs in this clubhouse and is truly worthy to wear this uniform. When you show up your manager like that, that is not Giants baseball. That is not what fans accept as, you know, supporters of this team. So Rafi is absolutely should be behind the eight ball with this franchise. Now, hitting that home run on Wednesday night, yeah, that'll turn things around a little bit. That's a good way to kind of get the conversation flowing in a positive direction. But one night does not offset what happened.
Well, and I heard, what's Kuiper's brother's name? Glenn?
Glenn, yes.
So as I was flying back, just familiarizing myself with the Giants and getting lathered up, what's going on with S7? I had a long flight. I was taking in some articles, and then on my flight, I was watching some podcasts. He has a podcast. And I could not disagree with him more on the Rafi Devers take. And he's awake. He's interesting. I think he has a lot of, you know, fascinating things to say. It's a good podcast. I suggest everybody, whatever, subscribe, do whatever it is that you do on YouTube and watch the damn thing. But he missed the boat when he was talking about specifically the fans, what it is you're referring to. Now, we may not agree with the fans booing. And by the way, they're handing out those bobbleheads tonight. Or today.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Rafi Devers bobblehead day today. What a great time.
You want to throw that thing into the bay? So don't throw it onto the field, all right? But you want to do something. The one thing.
Just sell it on eBay like everyone else
does. I got into a conversation with somebody else here at 95.7 The Game. We may disagree with what it is that fans want to do, but you cannot regulate that, okay? Fans, they don't have a seat at this table. One of the few things that they can do is boo the hell out of you. And we can't justify it. We can't sit there and say you shouldn't do that, as Glenn Kuiper was trying to say. Like, really? Really, you're going to boo Rafi? It may not make sense to us, but do you as a fan base. I remember they booed Podziemski when he's introduced out at Oracle, and a lot of people are like, why are you booing Podziemski, for crying out loud? But if you do, go ahead.
That's how fans let their voices be heard.
Major League Baseball may go on strike next year, right? And who gets screwed?
Probably
going to
happen.
Day, right?
We do, the fans.
Right. The fans get screwed constantly.
Yep.
You want to jack up prices? Go ahead. We'll still go. But one of the few things that we can do that you can't modify is you cannot tell us how we should or should not react as fans. And as fans, if I don't like what it is that Rafael Devers did, I want to flip him the bird, I want to boo the hell out of him, well, then it's my right to do so. If I want to take his bobblehead and throw it into the bay, they want to get together and do that as a unit, I'm all for it. But don't ever try and tell me, Glenn Kuiper, or anybody else out there, why are you booing Rafi? Really? Look, you may not agree.
Fans
with
are
him.
Smart enough to know why they need
to
boo him.
Well, if they're smart or dumb or whatever the hell it is that they're doing, but do you? Because you can't be regulated. It may not make sense, but I would never take away that right.
I agree. I 100% with you, Dan. That is how fans let their voices be heard. And they gave a little bit of booing on Thursday to Rafi Devers. There was a little bit of booing before the game when Landon Roop was announced in the pregame introductions as well. I would say both of those guys got less boos than Brandon Podziemski did, though, that one time. So say what you will about that. Pods is apparently still more reviled than Rafi Devers and Landon Roop right now. The way they handled this Rafi Devers thing, and again, I know this happened a few days ago. It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. We like to talk about things that happened throughout the week with the Giants. And even though this did happen a few days ago, this is not something that fans are going to forget, nor should they forget what Rafi did there and showing up his manager, Tony Vitello. I was disappointed that they did not sit him, Dan. I was very disappointed with the excuse-making they made for him, saying that, oh, it's just a sign of frustration. That's what Rafi is. You know, I ride or die with him. I'm going to quote the town when I talk about him.
I know you like his little movie quotes. They're getting old. Like, whose car are we going to take? Dude, you know that was...
I'll say this, though. When he hit the home run on Wednesday night, it was Wednesday night when he hit that home run, right? I'm not getting my days confused. There we go. And then afterwards, Tony's like, I told Rafi that if he gets on base, we're going to pinch run him. That's why he hit the home run. I laughed at that.
That was funny.
I would have laughed if I was there. Tony's like, Tony pointed out someone giving him the courtesy laugh. I would have given him well, when he did his Shawshank line, when he saw, like, you know, sometimes you got to wade through the poop to get to the sun, to the sunshine. He says that. There's a moment of silence. I'm just like, hell yeah. Just because I like the quote. But he kind of looked at me there. It's like, all right. I definitely would have said something there. But
this one was not what you should be quoting from a movie. Not at all.
This is, I would have liked to have seen some action. We had Keith Law on the Morning Roast on Tuesday, and we asked him about this. This is before Buster spoke. And this is what Law said the Giants should have done. Keith Law, for those who don't know, senior MLB writer for The Athletic. He's been all around baseball. He was a front office executive or front office consultant for the Blue Jays for a while. Here's what he had to say about Rafi Devers needing to sit for several days.
You bench him. I mean, this is the first thing you do, right? He shouldn't play again for at least several days with the expectation that he is going to make things right. Like, you want to get back in the lineup. And I understand he might say, I'm fine just going on the bench and collecting my check. But you have to do this both as a way to, it's like behavior management, like you would with a toddler, right? You can't smear your spaghetti up against the wall on the wall. I'm sorry. You can't. I understand you think it's art, but you can't do that.
I do think that the Giants should have benched Rafi for a couple days. I think that's how Tony lays down the law. I'm in charge here. You do not show me up. When you talk about, oh, we had a great conversation, he apologized this and that. And when he did apologize, if he did show contrition, let's be generous and say Rafi's being honest on that. Let's say he is actually sorry. He is actually contrite in his apology. And he does actually understand what he did was wrong and he cannot do that again. Let's be generous and assume that's the situation. You still have to have consequences for your actions. And I do think that for Tony Vitello, I would have liked to see him bench Rafi for a day or two just as a way of showing, I'm the big dog in this clubhouse. I'm the manager. I run this team. That's what I wanted to see from Tony Vitello. And if there was still a problem with Rothy after that, well, I'm sorry, a grown-up baseball player should understand why you need to suffer consequences for your actions. And I want players on this team who understand that dynamic.
Yeah, you can still apologize and still, you know, iron things out, but there can still be consequences and a benching.
I still because got punished. Yeah, when I misbehave as a kid, Dan, I got punished. I could say sorry all the live long day. My mom would say sorry doesn't cut it.
But at the end of the day, you have to set a precedence.
Exactly.
Because what if this happens with another player? Not necessarily this in particular, but if anything happens where a player wants to show up the manager, he can always revert back to this. Well, you can't go after me. You didn't do it to Rafi Devers, your star. This, you know what? I know you wanted to ask this question about Vitello and Buster Posey. Vitello is turning out to be a bozo. Tony Vitello is turning out to be Forrest Gump. I'm trying to think about what are the one of the redeeming qualities that he's provided at this point. And for whatever reason, he gets a pass. I know a lot of people are in his corner, and he has inherited a lot of crap, right? It's, like, a lot of this isn't on him.
I don't know how many managers are doing much better with this.
Well, what is it that he's done well, though?
How could any manager do well in this situation?
Well, I just think that there are things that there are subtleties that managers. If you gave me Pat Murphy, I think the record's a little bit better. I think that there's, you know, the handling of whether it's benching Chapman or whether what happened with Devers, certainly, you know, a lot of things that he has done wrong, I think, could be averted by someone who's a little bit more seasoned. I think maybe the attitude in the clubhouse, who knows how that shakes out in terms of wins and losses. I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but I'm trying to think, what is it, if you were to sort of be his agent or his attorney or his PR guy, his hype guy, what is it that he's done well now that we're at the halfway point of his first full season?
It's hard for me to pick anything, any one thing, Dan. It's...
I would say that one thing that I would say on his behalf, that everything has gone wrong, he has been pretty stoic. He's not somebody he's been somebody that has been able to guide the ship and not been all that emotional.
He hasn't lost his mind, I guess. Yes, he has kept his
cool. I think there's some redeeming values in that.
And I've heard behind the scenes that he takes the losses hard. And I think that's part of the growing process, is understanding that at the big league level, like in college, you play 60 games a year. At the pros, you're going to lose at least 60 games a year. Like, imagine telling Tony, hey, you're going to go 0-60 in a season of college baseball. He would not be able to comprehend that yet. He is going to be losing that many games every year, at least, that he is a manager of the Giants. That is such a massive transition that I don't think we really, it's hard to think on the outside looking at to truly comprehend what that transition is like for a guy as hyper-competitive as him.
You know what he looks like? He looks like a college manager who is trying to manage at the major league level and not ready for it. He's everything that, in a worst case scenario, we thought he potentially could be, and it's all coming to fruition. He doesn't know how to handle the veteran players. He doesn't have the respect to the veteran players. That's clearly evident. And he's made a lot of mistakes that have been quote-unquote growing pains. But to me, if you're going to manage at the major league level, certainly the San Francisco Giants, there's no such thing as training wheels. You have to hit the ground running. And he looks like a guy that is clearly over his skis. He looks like a guy that should not be
here.
Well,
that being said, though, Dan, I do think, and this is something that Shasky and I were talking about, Shasky brought up, we were discussing, and I absolutely agree with him. If Tony could get this team through this whole kerfluffle we've seen over the last couple weeks, with the Pride Night stuff, with the Rafi Devers stuff, all while still losing lots and lots of baseball games, if a month from now things are sailing smoothly again, people are still going to have feelings about what's transpired over the last couple weeks. But if he could get this team through this storm here, if he could still hold his head high at the end of this season, there is nothing I think he cannot handle in this. Like, this would be a difficult situation for even the most experienced managers in baseball to deal with. This guy is as green as they come, and I will say, I think he is handling it the best that he can right now. That is something I think, that is a feather I think you can stick in his cap. It's been messy this year. I'm not trying to excuse that.
I don't know that he's not necessarily part of the problem. So that if you were to tell me that he gets through all of this and we're ready to roll it back next year, with this guy at the helm, how do I know that he is not the culprit, that he's at the eye of the storm because he's so inexperienced and doesn't have the room and or the respect of the players? Because at the end of the day, it's all about communication. It's not about X's and O's. It's whether you can communicate with these players. He just looks like a bumpkin at this point.
Yeah.
He looks like a guy who fell off the turnip truck, who ended up on Market Street and is like, oh, somebody came up to me and wanted to look at my wallet. And I said, well, here you go. And that guy won't believe it. He ran off with the darn thing. I'll tell you what. I don't know where that came from. He sounds like
those crows from Dumbo.
He seems like
hope that's not offensive.
Forrest Gump. He seems like Gomer Pyle at this point. I don't know
Tony
what it
is. Tony does.
I don't know what it is that he brings. I don't know any of the things that maybe Buster Posey would be better to answer this, that whatever he thought that he was getting with this guy
would be the polar
opposite of Bob Melvin, that he'd be relatable with the young players. No, he's not. He's not relatable to the young players. The way he handles the young players is absolutely, that's one of the biggest eyesores and maybe at the top of the list in terms of the things that he's done wrong when it comes to Eldridge, when it comes to Barracuda and these young players. And
well, I think he's been given a roster that was made very difficult to work in some of these younger players. Like,
But Sam, I'm going to cut you off. I'm hearing a lot of excuses that this isn't on him. And I hear what you're saying, that he didn't put this bullpen together. That bullpen's a mess, and we all knew it going into the season. I get that. And that a lot of this rusted. But at what point do we then turn and look at him and saying, well, you may not be the part of the, you didn't put,
you may not be part
together.
Of the problem, but you may not be part of the solution.
Thank
either.
You.
No, and I think that's kind of to be the next step for him. And again, go back to what Keith Law, joining the roast on Tuesday, he said the solution, Tony needs to take charge.
Vitello needs to take charge. That's going to require the front office also having his back. It may also mean he needs to have someone else on his staff who's a more experienced manager or has more experience on a big league bench to try to help guide him in some of these situations, because it's just, you're managing a different type. You're managing older people who make a lot more money and don't need you and probably look at you, right? Ravi Devers says, I got an 8-year deal. Tony, you only got a 3-year deal and you're on a knife's edge right now. He's like, I can outlast you. That's true, but you really don't want that dynamic in the clubhouse. So I think there are a lot of steps they need to take to try to repair the situation, to make it clear, either make it clear Tony Vitello is our manager, he will be our manager, and you need to respect his authority, or they need to move on.
I back up Keith on that one. I think they do need to reaffirm their support behind Tony. I want Tony to take control of that clubhouse by any means necessary. I want to go to Steven Rizzo in a minute, but if I put it out there, who would you rather see stay? Who would you rather see go, Tony or Rafi?
Both of them.
Well, no, you got to pick one. That's the game. You can't pick both.
Rafi.
You would see Rafi go?
Because he's got a 10-year deal. Vitello's got a 3-year deal.
So you would rather see Rafi go, not Tony?
Rafi.
Okay. Well, yes. Yes, Rafi's going.
Would I want between those two? Rafael has to.
Okay.
Rafael Devers is who I'd like to say before Tony Vitello. As bad as Tony Vitello is.
Okay, I was trying to clarify. Same. I would rather keep Tony and let Rafi go.
Was I supposed to support what it is that I had to say?
I want to clarify your answer. It's all good. Todd, Steven Rizzo,
He asked me one or the other. I said Rafael.
Yeah, okay. No, Rizzo, what do you got?
No, I was going to kind of piggyback off the point that Dan made about how Tony Vitello and company has handled the young players. And I think just to narrow it down a little bit, we could focus on the bench. And I don't know if you guys know this, but did you know that Buddy Kennedy is still on the roster?
I did, yeah.
Buddy Kennedy is, Tony Vitello doesn't use his bench. Buddy Kennedy hasn't had a plate appearance since June 10th. That's 17 days ago. Wow. He has not had a plate appearance since the Giants, that Bryce Eldridge game.
Has he gotten in on the field as like a defense? No,
has not appeared in the game. So one thing I will say is that these guys are being run out there every day. Jonah Cox was hitting .400 in the minor leagues, and he gets brought up. He doesn't really play. So it's like these guys really don't play. And I don't know if we know what kind of manager Tony Vitello is, but I think if you're still the manager of a bad team, there are things you could do right. You could just put in, you know, a bullpen guy, and it's a good matchup on paper, the best matchup you're capable of, and you could, you know, lose that matchup just because your talent's not good, but you just don't switch it up.
Well, I think it's difficult. He's got a roster to get in Chapman, Adames, Arias, Devers, who just, those guys never want to come out of the lineup. Like, well, Casey Schmidt's got to be in the lineup every day. Like,
that's on him to go to them and saying you're coming. He is not the manager.
That's why
of the
team. Has to take charge.
But you can't say you have to take charge. That's either in the gene pool or it's not. Yeah. You know why he gets a pass? I think it's because he's a good-looking guy with a chiseled chin, and he sits at the corner of the end.
I think it's because the issues are just so much bigger than him. That's why I honestly think, let's pick this conversation up on the other side. Are the Giants better off with or without Tony, Rafi, Buster? Maybe they're better off with one and not the other two, or they're better off with two, not the other one. We'll keep peeling this back. It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Line to right. Barakato dives, and he got it.
Yeah, Trevor McDonald digs it.
You bet.
Barakato to center field, and deep. It is gone! He's done it again!
Oh, my goodness.
And another towering home run. 445 for the second day in a row. The man is inspired. 6-2 Giants.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
Ooh, Barakato. I see what you're doing there, Risotto. Risotto, Barakato. It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Hey, we're on YouTube. Make sure you're signing up to become a member of Game Pass Pro on 95.7 The Game's YouTube channel. Get access to private AMAs with the host, exclusive content from events, and in-depth insight after the biggest games. Go on YouTube, search 95.7 The Game, and sign up now to become a member of Game Pass Pro. Comes Rafi Devers, Tony Vitello, Buster Posey. Would the Giants be better off with or without them? Why do I ask that question? Well, we had Keith Law on the Morning Roast the other day. He basically said Giants need to decide whether they're better off with or without. I believe it was about Buster Posey, though.
It's a sunk cost, right? Vitello's paid, he's paid. So the decision to keep Vitello should be, do we think we're better off with him or without him? And if they've made the decision, for whatever reason, we want to move on from him, then I'd say yes. I would say let baseball ops hire the next manager. Let Zach Manassian and his group actually make the hire. You know, but this is the problem, is Buster is the guy who just sort of parachuted in and is saying, do this, do this, do this, do this. No, you have an entire staff of really talented, really smart people from Manassian on down who can do this. And hiring the manager is a pretty important thing for a GM and a front office to do. Let them do this with a real process.
So that was Keith Law on Tuesday on the Morning Roast. Giants need to decide whether or not they're better off with or without Tony Vitello, with Buster Posey making these decisions here as the head of baseball operations. Keith went on to say that a lot of the baseball ops decisions have been very good, citing the performance of the farm system right now. He's very high on Zach Manassian, and through all this, I got to wonder what is going to happen with Zach Manassian out of all this. What's going to happen to a lot of these guys after this season? Because this is the kind of season where, I mean, there's a chance they could turn things around and go on a run, but more than likely, this is going to be a team that's going to be finishing with somewhere between 95 and 100 losses. And in a season like that, with this fan base, they're going to demand that at least one head roll after this year. Someone's going to have to be that head. And I do wonder, just because of how this business works sometimes, Dan, if Zach Manassian is going to be the proverbial head that's hung up for the masses to cheer at the end of this season.
Well, you know me, the sacrificial lamb is one Tony, last name Vitello. You cannot bring him back at this point. I wouldn't take that risk. He hasn't shown me one quality as to why he should be a manager of a Major League Baseball team. And we can go over and parse through whether the way he handles the bench or the lack thereof or the bullpen, and he's been handed this crap sandwich. We get all of that. But at the end of the day, does this guy have a big league personality? Does this guy have the respect? Does he have the sort of persona of somebody that could be a leader of a Major League Baseball franchise? To me, he looks exactly like who it is that he is, and that is a successful college baseball coach and not somebody who should be at the major league level. And maybe things will change in the second half of the season, but my mind is made up that you have to end this relationship sooner rather than later. I know a lot of people are giving him a pass, again, because he looks good with his chiseled chin there sitting in the corner of the dugout. If this dude
he's very personable with the media, which I think that's good too. You know,
his media appearances are getting ridiculous. His quotes.
He's getting better with them sometimes. He's getting a little bit shorter with his answers. He's not as long winded as he used to be. I think he's getting better with those things there. But
he did not have a good week, Sam.
No, he did not have the best of weeks. He's had a lot, but no one's having good weeks with this team this year. It's not like, and this thing, you say, well, if Tony has to go, then at that point, I do think. I look at it like this. When it comes to Buster and Tony, I don't think you can move off of one and then not move off of the other. If Buster decides after this year that, you know what, this isn't the right move with Tony, which, by the way, apparently this was Zach Manasian's idea. He goes back saying Zach was the original one who came up with this one. That's why I think he would be the sacrificial lamb for this one here if they do decide to roll ahead, just to roll ahead, you know, after the season. But if Buster does decide to move off of Tony Vitello, I don't know if I feel good about him hiring another manager. I don't know if I would do that. Like, you already botched this one so badly, and this season went so off the rails. There was such an abdication of leadership that we saw throughout this season. Like, forget the pride stuff. You went in to address the Rafi situation with the media without even talking to Rafi first. Like, how does that happen? How do you not at least call him or be like, hey, Rafi, I got to go meet with these people in a few minutes. Can we chat really quick? Like, do something like that. So if Buster moves off Tony, I think you got to move off Buster too. Conversely, at the end of the year, let's say Buster decides to step down. Yeah, I'm not cut out for this, or I don't want to do this anymore, blah, blah, blah. What? I don't see another general manager, president of baseball operations coming in and saying, well, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot with this guy, this, you know, college manager that I got, that I inherited. So if one goes, I do feel like the other is going to go as well.
Or the other way of looking at that is that either Manasian, whoever it is that hired Tony Vitello, it's sort of like tearing a script from the playbook of one of Farhan Zaidi, right? Like, he gets rid of Kapler before they get rid of him.
Well, yeah, right? And that's kind of like, I look at John Lynch with the Niners as the same way. Like, he's kind of like a shield for Kyle Shanahan. When things go south, Lynch will be the first one fired, and that's kind of like the shot across the bow to Kyle. Hey, you're next man up. Turn this around. We're a ways away from that happening with the Niners. I'm just using that as an example. I agree with you, Dan. If, like, Manasian going would be the shot across the bow. Hey, there's the warning shot. Buster, you got to turn this around.
I think this really, I don't know, again, blaming Vitello, maybe that's not where the crosshairs should be. I'm just trying to think of a manager that's going to righten this ship. And even if things were to turn around next year, is he the guy that's going to do it? I'm not doing this to be a wise guy, but I'm trying to think of redeeming qualities going forward when we think about what it is that he's done up to this point. Yeah. And now that we've seen a good sample size of the body of work, this dude, well, to me, is a coconut. He's a bumpkin.
He was supposed to be brought in, I think. The big thing he was brought in to do was they wanted to bring in a different energy and a different culture. And I think you saw that a little bit in spring training. Like, I remember being around this team in spring training. It's like, wow, these guys seem really excited to get to this season. Now, one thing, and I didn't really bring this up at the time, but it was something that stuck out to me, and maybe I should have brought this up sooner. During the week that I was in spring training, I interact with a lot of the players, whether it was Gage or Walker or played Tidwell or Bryce Eldridge or Drew Gilbert. I did not really see a whole lot of Chapman, Adames, and Devers. Those three were kind of off doing their own thing most of the time. Now, granted, they're the three high-priced veterans, and I heard before I was there, it was those three and Luis Arraez always hanging out together. So maybe it's neither here nor there, but I did think it was interesting that you had the entire team and then you had those three. I thought that was kind of an interesting dynamic, but it felt like to me the biggest goal for Tony Vitello was this is a good team that was just sleepwalking last year. So we need a guy who's going to come in here, is a little bit younger, bring a little bit more energy and kind of fire up this clubhouse a little bit. And that'll be what this team needs to go from 81-81 to 86, 87, 88 wins, being the thick of that wild card race, and then go forward from there. That was before we thought this bullpen would be, that was before we realized this bullpen was an absolute nightmare. And I think that was before we realized that, I don't know how much Willie and Rafi are truly buying in on what's going on right now. I think that's a part of it as well. And you're seeing that kind of crescendo here with what Rafi Devers did in the last week. I've always felt, Dan, that if Tony Vitello inherited a roster full of young rookies or 24, 25-year-old kids, that would have been a better team for Tony to work with, getting in basically with all these kids at the ground level and developing up with them, so to speak. Like, imagine if Tony had an entire, you know, clubhouse full of Drew Gilberts, basically. That, I think, would have been better off for him than inheriting the roster that he did inherit this year.
Well, again, if I was to use the example of his relationship with the younger players in this baseball team as any sort of a measuring stick or a barometer, I can't arrive at that conclusion. It's not as though he has a special relationship with Bryce Eldridge or any of these younger players. In fact, I think he's inhibited their growth. And so it's not, again, there's not, I can't point at one thing and saying, yeah, he works well with these kids, despite the fact that the team has been so poorly, he does this or he does that. He's just a guy who stands there, takes his lumps, and gets a pass because I think he's got these Hollywood chops. You know, seriously.
I don't think it's just because it's good looks.
I'm telling you.
I think it's more nuanced than that.
Tony La Russa at age 80, the 80-year-old version of Tony La Russa standing there at that dugout, piling up all these losses and doing the exact same things that Tony Vitello has been doing, what would we be saying?
Well, here, I'll do you one better.
How,
let's go back to 2016, the previous holder of the worst bullpen in Giants history. 30 blown saves that year, I believe, is a franchise record. And they had the greatest manager in this organization's history pushing all the buttons, and Bruce Bochy. Like, Bochy had a bullpen that was just, you could not win with it that year. It was a bullpen that was as bad as this year's bullpen. And no one was pointing at Bochy that year saying, well, this guy doesn't have it anymore. Everyone was pointing at the bullpen saying, what's he supposed to do? I think it's a similar situation. When you give Tony a no-win situation, I don't know if you can really blame him when he comes out with no wins, essentially. So I don't think it's
Bochy
looks
up
good.
Equity. Let's not.
No, yes, Bochy did have equity. I'm not dismissing that. But I think it's a situation where, like, what has Tony shown this year? How can he show anything with the hand that he has been dealt? I don't think a lot of managers.
Is he blameless?
No, he's made mistakes. He's screwed up. There's been bullpen decisions I haven't liked. The having guys pitch across innings, I think he's been slowed. Like Caleb Killian on Thursday, I thought he let him go one batter too soon. Lawrence Butler got that base hit to make it 7-6. You could still get back into a game like that. He lets, you know, Killian's clearly on the ropes. He lets him face Max Muncy. Max Muncy gets a base hit, the other Max Muncy, not the fat one in LA. He gets a base hit and all of a sudden becomes 9-6. And a game where you could maybe get back into it now seems more out of reach. Those are issues, yeah. I will shake my stick at Tony Vitello doing that all the live long day. Tony's not the first manager to go to the wrong guy, though. Tony's not the first manager to leave a guy in one batter too long. Those are mistakes that any, even the most seasoned managers can make there.
That's not how I measure whether a guy's effective or not. Well, let me just ask you another question. Do you think he's a good communicator? Do you think he has the respect to that locker room? Do you think he has the personality of a major league manager that can take a baseball team deep into the playoffs and or be somebody that commands, again, the entire room when he walks into it? Say what you will about Steve Kerr. I don't think he's the appropriate coach for this version, this iteration of the Golden State Warriors. But we all know that. We know the coaches of the Warriors.
I think he did at first. Going back to spring training, the excitement that these guys had to play for Tony that year, I'll never forget what Matt Gage said.
But spring training doesn't mean anything if it doesn't translate to the regular season.
Well, no, that's what I'm getting at there. But like when Matt Gage is like, guys really perk up when Tony walks in. I do think that there was some buy-in at some point. But then you did see cracks start to form where I do think this roster started to maybe doubt what was going on with him. When Tony says, you know, maybe I was a little too fired up, too much fire and brimstone that first week. And Robbie Ray's like, we're professionals. It's fine. When Tony's saying things like, into the Jesse Rogers story that came out on ESPN last week, we talked about on the show last week, Dan. Tony's like, yeah, we had some issues that boiled over. We got them taken care of. It was nobody's fault. And Eric Haas is like, I won't say it's boiled over, just some course correcting. Those are some concerning situations there. So I don't know how he is at handling issues behind the scene. That's where I get into maybe a younger roster with guys who aren't like, you know, the more established guys like the Rafi Devers's, the Willy Adames's, who maybe might look at Tony and be like, well, I've been in this game for 10 years and I got this deal. You haven't been in this game before and you got a 3-year deal. What are you going to do about it? That would be difficult for any manager in that position. Now, I will say this, and you've kind of alluded to this in the past, like the team like the Giants should not be a proving ground for people who have never done this before. You could say that about Tony with this team. I would even say you can go back to Farhan Zaidi, who had never run a team before, and then all of a sudden he is thrust into power running this team. Like guys like Farhan Zaidi, guys like Zach Manassian, guys like Tony Vitello probably would have been better off starting off with a smaller market team like, you know, Minnesota or Cincinnati or Kansas City.
I don't think you can start in the majors. I don't think that there's a small market team. I think you make your mistakes somewhere else. As a manager, I give the example of Pat Murphy. Pat Murphy also came from the college ranks, but he sat on the Padre bench. He was a minor league manager. He was an interim manager before getting
the through the process. Yeah, and I do wonder how people look at Tony around the league and get irritated at him for, you know, cutting the line, as some people might say. That might piss some people off. And I do think there are a lot of people out there who want Tony to fail. They see these crises going on, and they're like, ha ha, serves him right. He didn't deserve to be in there in the first place. That I don't appreciate. Like,
you don't appreciate it, but it might be right at the end of the day.
Well, I want to give him the chance to prove himself. Give him the chance to screw up and fail before we say, oh, yeah, we were right about you. Like, the rooting, it's the fact that without even formulating an opinion on him, you're seeing people who want him to fail. That is what frustrates me in this whole situation with Tony Vitello. That is why I said at the beginning of the year, playoffs are not the goal. The goal is Tony needs to be comfortable managing this team by the end of the year. We're 81 games in. Can he increase that comfort level over the next 81 games? In terms of achieving that simple goal that I laid out, right now I don't think they're achieving that, this organization. And that is going to be a problem for them moving forward. You want to talk to our guy?
Who's this?
Ruderman.
Oh, is it that time of the show?
It's that time of the show. He's hopeful that Tony's going to be back next year. So I'd be curious to hear his thoughts on what makes Tony such a great manager.
We don't need to go into deep details of baseball. We're just here for one reason.
You asked the question, what are Tony's redeeming qualities as a manager? Let's hear Steven Ruderman's thoughts on Tony's redeeming qualities as a manager. What's going on, Steven?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Can I set you up? Ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again for Ruderman.
He doesn't really know what to do with that introduction there. Steven, we're having this Tony Vitello conversation here. What would you say is the redeeming qualities of Tony Vitello?
I don't know if I would say anything redeeming. You know, I was saying the same thing about Pat Murphy. I've been telling you, Sam, and I've been saying this to other people. I think it's obvious that the Giants have been rebuilding since the deadline last July. And I think what would have been the best move is to let Bob finish out the final year of his contract, bring Tony in to manage it, you know, maybe double A or something like that. And then once they inevitably have this season and they trade away vets and are deeper into the rebuild, then bring them up to the show next season. That's what I think they should have done. I love Tony coming here. He's got the fire. He's got the passion that I think is needed out of a big league manager. And I think you have patience with him and he'll be a good big league manager. I just think he was brought in a year too early.
Yeah, fire and passion. We're not watching the same manager, and I don't know what that's translated to in terms of wins and losses.
Look at him in Tennessee. Very fiery, very passionate manager, but here with the big club, in the big leagues, he's managing scared. You know, look at what he did with Rafael Devers and how Devers showed him up. And this goes back to May when Devers hit that leadoff triple in the bottom of the eighth inning against the Pirates on Mother's Day. Or I'm sorry, the leadoff double that should have been a triple, but he was washing a shot. And then that ended up costing the Giants the run. They came within an out of losing that game by a run, so almost cost the Giants the game. There was the drop pop-up in the sun that he was thrown at first on May 23rd against the White Sox. When Tony didn't bench him after that, that set the stage for what happened Sunday in Miami.
Yeah, so
and what a manager needs to do is make a statement that this kind of stuff will not be tolerated. Now, Billy Martin was around after that leadoff double, which could have been triple. There would have been a pinch runner in there right there.
And a fight in the dugout, too, probably.
Billy would have torn into him.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Steven.
He shouldn't be out there following it.
So then why do you like this guy? Yeah, I think you're supporting my case, but why is it that you, and it seems as though a lot of people, for whatever reason, are giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I don't understand it.
Well, because Tony was brought in a year too early. They should have let Bob finish out this year, brought in Tony to manage in the minor leagues, and then after they traded the vets at the deadline this year and they were deeper into the rebuild next year and had more of the kids coming up, then bring in Tony to manage when they were deeper into the rebuild. What they really did was they brought Tony here a year too early.
Hey, Steven, what did you make of Buster coming out to talk to the media when he hadn't even talked to Rafi yet?
That was a circus. And I got to tell you, Rothy's interview, I mean, Posey's interview was its own thing, but Rothy's interview was really bad. When Rothy went out and said, well, this is why I don't talk to the media. You guys blow everything out of proportion. This was a guy openly showing up his manager and then throwing a hissy fit when he was taken out of the game. There's no excuse for that. And what I'm just going to tell you bluntly is this guy, this is the kind of guy who's a cancer in the clubhouse. I want you guys to think about this. The Giants were 11 games over 500 when they made the Rothy trade last June 15th. It was a week after the Rothy trade. I remember there was the thing where he didn't go and he blew off Will Clark to work at first base. And then it was a week after he came over that the collapse of last season started. It was after that that the Red Sox, who had been a 500 team, went on a flukish run and went to the playoffs. In baseball, a good clubhouse, it can take just one bad apple to completely destroy a good clubhouse. And as much as we all love Barry Bonds, we have to be honest about something here. The Giants never won a championship with Barry Bonds here. Bonds had four lockers, had his own special treatment. If you ever watched Bonds on Bonds, he was flying on his own private plane and not with the team. It's situations like that that teams don't win. What was the big thing when the Giants were winning their world championships? Clubhouse chemistry. Mm-hmm. 25 guys, one common goal. And I don't think it was a coincidence that they won three titles in their first 7 years without Bonds. And when you bring in someone like Rafael Devers, as I said, just one guy can ruin a clubhouse.
Yeah,
and I
that's
think
a
that
hell
is exactly
take.
What has happened.
No, I mean, this is a guy who's always been very against the big-name contracts, some that he and I argue about a lot. And his skepticism towards the big-name contracts has finally paid off here. Steven, I asked Buster on Tuesday about the record since acquiring Rafi. And I wanted you to hear what Buster said about it, and I want to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you on why that has happened the way that it has. I mean, you can go back and look at Rafi's career numbers and, make an argument that has been one of the elite hitters in the league. So I don't have a great answer for you.
So not a great answer there from Buster Posey. What do you think of that answer? Just the leadership that Buster has shown this week, or lack thereof.
Very, yeah. And I'm giving Buster the benefit of the doubt. I hope he's around next season. I think he has done a very good job with the farm system. He's done a very bad job in terms of the team on the field this season. But that answer was basically reflective of a young and overly ambitious president of baseball operations who wanted to make a big splash but really overdid it in his first year. And people should have seen this coming. You know, we saw how, and granted the Red Sox could have handled that, but we saw how Rafi behaved in his final months with the Red Sox. This should have been seen from a million miles away. Buster.
Hey, it's that time of the show. We got to cut you off there, Ruderman. It's that time of the show where you get the Ruderman recall.
Steve, I want you to call your version of Rafi telling Jonah Cox not to pinch run for him.
All right, 2-1 Marlins here in the top of the ninth inning, and Devers draws the walk, and his tying run will be at first to start the inning, and it looks like Jonah Cox is going to come into pinch run. Rafael Devers does not want to be pinch run for. He's wagging his finger at Tony Vitello. I don't know what's going on here. Jonah Cox looks just as we are. The first base umpire, Nate Tomlinson, is now having to tell Cox to get in there. Rafi's going to leave the game, and he is going to let his displeasure be quite known as he is walking off very upset. He gets into the dugout. Someone tries to pat him on the behind, and he moves his behind out of the way like my cat when I try and pet her on the back. Oh, this is not good, bro. You could not have someone showing up your manager like this. And,
The Ruderman replay, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Steven. I'll see you at the ballpark tomorrow, bud.
Ruderman replay each and every week brought to you by, we got to get a sponsor.
Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.